you kill him for? Did he kill him for?
Hi, I'm Lise Wheel, and this is Wheel of Justice. For years, certain people have been trying to figure out what happened to 64-year-old Adeline Wilford. She was murdered in her Talbot County, Maryland farmhouse on January 5th, 1987, which in and of itself is tragic, but a few things make this more than just a senseless crime. The first is how brutal this murder was. When Adeline was found dead in her home, she had multiple stab wounds to her face, head, chest, and shoulder. A knife was found embedded in her cheek, and she had multiple defensive wounds. And then there's the fact that for about 12 years, no one was arrested, and the case was more or less dormant. That's until three men were finally arrested for this grisly murder. Two were sentenced to life and still sit in jail. Now, if they did do it, justice was served, right? These two should spend the rest of their lives behind bars if they took someone else's life. The thing of it is, though, these two just might have been wrongfully convicted. Now, I'm getting ahead of myself, though. Let's go back to the beginning. On January 5th, Adeline went about her day just like she would any other. She visited a framer in Easton about 9:30 a.m. She went to a doctor's appointment at around 1:30 in the afternoon. She went through the drive-in at her bank, and then she went home. And this is where her day took a horrible turn. By all accounts, she found an intruder or multiple intruders in her home when she went in. What likely started as an intention to steal some stuff from Adeline while she was out quickly escalated when she arrived home. She startled the intruders, and they clearly reacted because she was tragically and brutally stabbed many times and died from blood loss on her kitchen floor. Police were called at around 3 p.m. by a Mr. John Ripley, leaving officers to estimate that Adeline's time of death was at some time between 2:10 and 3 p.m. when police arrived. When they got there, they found Adeline dead on her kitchen floor with several stab wounds, many of which were defense wounds. There were unpacked groceries on the kitchen table, her coat was still on, and her keys were still in the back door. So it's really not a huge leap to say she had barely arrived home from the store when she discovered whoever was in her house. Police noticed the utility room window was propped open with a stick. So it was determined that it was probably the point of entry. It was also noted by police that the bedroom and the living room had been ransacked, indicating that the intruders were either looking for something in particular or anything of value. And whoever these intruders were, they walked away with Mrs. Wilford's pocketbook, wallet, credit cards, an undetermined amount of cash, and a diamond ring valued at $2,100. A lot of people wanted this case solved, but police really didn't have a lead. There were actually fingerprints and bloody footprints found at the scene of the crime, and yet for years there was just speculation about who could have done this. That's not to say that numerous suspects weren't looked at, though in fact police had a list of 27 potential suspects. Among the 27 was John Ripley, the man who first found Adeline and called the police. Now, John was a friend of Adeline's and may have been romantically involved with her. The interesting thing here is that Mr. Ripley was married, so a romantic relationship might have been the catalyst for either him or his wife to murder. And it's definitely odd, in my opinion, that the Ripleys kept a bag full of newspaper clippings and notes related to Adeline's death. Now, why would they do that? But in the end, John was ruled out as a suspect after being interviewed many times, and he also went through a polygraph exam. Adeline's ex-husband was also considered. Other than he has an obvious connection with Adeline and occasionally had disagreements with her, there wasn't really any indication that he was involved. A UPS driver was also added to the list. His route included Adeline's home, and he had that route at the time and on the date of the murder. The questionable thing about this UPS guy is that he had a UPS log showing that it took him 4 hours to complete his route. Meanwhile, investigators completed the same route in less than an hour. Maybe he knew Adeline was gone and broke in to steal some items of value, and then she surprised him and he panicked. It could be. He also didn't show up to work on the 2 days after the murder. And he refused to take a polygraph exam. All of this adds up to at least suspicion, but it was never more than that for some reason. Many of the others on that list were the result of tips from people in the area. And some who had really no connection to Adeline were seemingly considered just to cover all bases. Like a burglar, who was considered as a possible suspect due to similarities found between his burglaries and the murder of Adeline. Though his alibi was never confirmed, he did pass a polygraph exam, so he too was dropped from the list. But even with all of these suspects, the case went cold for years, over a decade. Then, in 1999, 12 years after the murder, Ms. Wilfred's son, angered that the case was still unsolved, offered a $10,000 reward for information leading to the arrest of the murder or murderers. An additional $15,000 was offered for information that would lead to a conviction. That's a lot of money, $25,000 on the table. A good amount of money, if you ask me. And this is the point in the story when it's important for you to know a little bit about the woman named Beverly Hathaway. She told police at least as early as 1994 that Jonathan Smith, who happens to be her nephew, David Faulkner, and Ray Andrews were responsible for the murder. She described seeing these three men come out of Ms. Wilford's home at the date and time of the murder. And at least one of them, according to Ms. Hathaway, was covered in blood. Nothing came of this, though. At least not until 2000, when Ms. Hathaway was interviewed a second time. And once again, she said Jonathan, Ray, and David were responsible for the murder of Adeline. This time, though, police officers entertained her theories, and when Beverly offered to wear a wire while talking to her nephew, Jonathan, they jumped on it. On this wire, Jonathan confesses to killing Adeline, and this is where the case finally has some direction. It looks like Adeline's family might finally get some answers, and three men might finally be held accountable. Based on the wire, Jonathan, David, and Ray are all arrested. And then Ray confesses while he's being interrogated. Now, with two confessions from two of the people supposedly involved, it's not surprising that in 2001, Jonathan and David are convicted to life without parole for the murder of Adeline Wilford. Seems straightforward, right? Two of the three admitted in some way to killing Adeline, and a witness says she saw the same two men and one other leaving the scene of the crime on the right date and the right time. But it's not quite that simple. First of all, Ms. Hathaway's story is tainted by the fact that she was likely motivated by the $25,000 reward to make a story up. And it's also been uncovered that she negotiated immunity agreements for her grandson in exchange for her story against the three men. So she had a vested interest in providing police with information they could use. But what about Jonathan's confession? Even if Beverly isn't the most trustworthy person to build a case on, you can't discount that Jonathan confessed. I actually got the wire audio to listen to. And before you listen, there's something you should know about Jonathan. He has a severe hearing impairment. According to an expert for the defense, even with hearing aids, Jonathan only hears roughly 25%. He can read lips and so could understand some of what his aunt was saying to him, but he likely only caught 55, 60% of the conversation, which means for the rest of it, he was filling in blanks or guessing.
I'm going to ask you something. I want to know. You told me once, I'm going to ask you again. Because I heard something in the wind. You know that day I seen you on Kingston Road when that old woman got murdered? And you told me the dog bit you and you stabbed it. Who killed the old woman? You? You told me you did. Oh. I think David done it. Why was he wearing your coat?
Why did David have on your coat that day?
I don't know.
You're laughing. Why did he?
I do not
want
to.
Why were you in that field with blood all over you? And no coat. I seen you going up the road that day, you know it? And you had a blue coat on, and Ray and you both had hunting hats on. And then when I come back by there, you were in that cornfield. And you said that blood come off of a dog, but I think that you held her and David killed her, or one of you three done it.
They never found out that happened.
I know, that's why I want to know before I die. I seen you. Did I ever tell anybody? You know I ain't going to tell them. You damn, you're my blood.
It's a signal. One person knows and ain't a signal. With two people
know. All three of you know.
Right. It's only two of us.
It was you and Ray and David.
They went there
for
half
a server. Where was he? Ray was right with you in the damn field.
Yeah, that's what I was done with.
You and David, who was the person in the truck that you were waiting for? Was it David's truck? Because you thought my little blue truck was whoever the hell you were looking for. What the hell did you kill him for? Did he kill him for?
I don't know. Can't remember.
Jonathan, you're lying because you're laughing. Well, why do you think I'm going to tell anybody? I ain't never told nobody in 12 damn years. I just wanted to know. Why did you kill her? I thought she let you in there when you went fishing.
I knew she had money.
You knew she had money?
She had money.
But you didn't get none?
Uh-huh.
You did get it?
Uh-huh.
Well, what the hell did you do with it, John? There must not have been much because you still walked to Cambridge or hitchhiked or went with David.
Yeah, it's funny all one time. It's gone now. It's funny a little bit here and a little bit there. Can't spend that much. That's how it's just caught. I think it's right enough by 2 4 4. I think
it's that way. Did they get in?
Three ways.
How much did you get?
$60,000.
But why did David have your coat?
He got cut.
He got cut? So he put your coat on? Didn't he have new coat?
He had too much blood on him.
My ear goes shut and I can't hear. How'd he get cut?
Cut himself.
He cut his own self?
This barrel. Over his other side. She was asleep.
She was asleep?
She woke up.
Well, how did she get the knife? How did he get the knife? Well, did he cut her? So you both stabbed her. Well, you right click or you got away with it.
So what do you think? Just how reliable do you think this so-called admission is? Reliable enough to convict two men of murder and sentence them for life? And what about Ray Andrews? He also confessed while being interrogated. But it turns out that Mr. Andrews has an intellectual disability and was perhaps fed facts. So his confession might not be reliable either. Ray Andrews was also given a plea deal. In exchange for his cooperation, he would only be charged with involuntary manslaughter with a recommended 5-year sentence, unlike Jonathan and David, who were given life. So he may have had an incentive to stick to a certain story. Where does that leave us then? Well, with a lot of questions. We know two men are in jail for a crime they may not have committed. And somewhere in the midst of all of this, the Innocence Project got involved. Lawyers from the organization are actively fighting for Smith and Faulkner's freedom. For now, Jonathan Smith and David Faulkner remain locked up, even though there's no physical evidence that points to them. But did they do it? And if they didn't, how was it they could be convicted, sentenced, and still in jail? Next time on Wheel of Justice, I'm going to tell you all about Ms. Hathaway. She's quite a character, so you won't want to miss it. Till next time, I'm Lise Wheel with Wheel of Justice.